I'd like to start by introducing you to Elsie. And this comes from the introduction in my book. Elsie Nurmi died on Friday, October 13, 2000, enough into the new millennium to firmly plant her feet and say, "I made it," but not long enough to make much of a dent. She was, frankly, demented, one in a long family line of those stricken with Alzheimer's. I feel in some ways those last years were the best for both of us. We had more fun, we laughed more. She resisted the disease with aplomb, insisting she never be told she had it. As her memory faded, she knew enough to ask me to get her a new brain. "Can't you find a doctor for that, Barbara?" She also knew enough to hurl her cold fury at me when I moved her from Florida to Maryland, where I could supervise her care, icily telling me, "I never use the word love with you. I don't really like you." I watched her life peel away like an onion. First to go were the names of friends and her how-to-do-it knowledge. Sandra and I, her two daughters, dropped off the memory tree soon after like overripe fruit. The memory of Herbie, her deceased husband, languished for a while, then it too was gone. But last to go, and most slowly, was the memory of her job and her name. Elsie Julia Elizabeth Norland Nurmi, Protocol Officer, U.S. Department of State. She led American delegations overseas using presidential aircraft. She attended coronations, private audiences with the Pope, and met queens. When heads of state visited the United States, she coordinated hotels, food, and travel. In such heady circumstances, what surprised her most were the funny human moments, such as handing the First Lady, Lady Bird Johnson, a bouquet of flowerless stems. But then her memory slipped. Was she in the motorcade when Kennedy died? In the car behind him? She told everyone who saw the personally signed presidential photos that she was part of history. Only she couldn't quite remember which part. But then it no longer mattered. She forgot it all. As she forgot this world, she began to see into another world. She caught up with old friends visiting from the other side. Strangely, only the deceased paid social calls in this in-between land. She'd point them out, frustrated that we couldn't see them. These forays seemed nice, like postcards from the future, a future we all will encounter one day. Sometimes she brought back important information. One afternoon, she told us her brother had died, saying, "I can't stop him. He won't listen to me." The next day, we heard the same news from 1,200 miles away by telephone. Of course, over time, her words began to go to garble land. Eventually, we had only sweet phrases like "thank you," "yes," "no," and "no." As a 13-year-long disease progressed, I began to observe something remarkable happening. Mom became more honest. No longer able to be polite, her yeses and nos came from all that was left of her, an unvarnished and unadorned soul. As I sat by her side talking to her as though she were entirely aware, I felt she was entirely there and aware. I conversed with her spirit, knowing that it was immutable and simply trapped in a diseased body. Eventually, in the last year of her life, when anyone might believe nothing of Elsie remained, I believed all of Elsie remained. I was convinced that telepathic modes of communication existed. Now, I didn't come upon that easily, and you'd have to read the book to find out how I got there, because there was a long story behind that. But how else could she know that her brother had died 24 hours before we did? Really. We only had to find a way to connect. Having worked with Kenna, a friend and a medical intuitive with over 20 years' experience in energy healing, I saw no reason why Kenna couldn't telepathically communicate with my mother. Certainly, I told myself, I'd recognize whether or not an authentic connection occurred. Mom would give me clear clues. And thus began a series of conversations that not only spanned the last 9 years of Mom's life, but also continued after she passed over. As the disease ravaged her body, I saw and felt a pure soul emerging. Quite remarkable, it seemed as shocking in some respects as a caterpillar melting down to liquid in a cocoon only to emerge as a butterfly. The last time I saw her, she gripped my arms and stared at me fiercely. Rather than lights out, as we commonly say of those with advanced Alzheimer's, I saw a transcendent light on. I never saw Alzheimer's as a dread disease. I always saw Elsie as whole and intact, present and real. I talked to her that way. I felt as though her true, complete self hovered in and around this diseased body, listening, watching, enjoying, and definitely not quite ready to say goodbye. I knew, as did my sister, that when she decided to go, it'd be fast. Kenna, the medical intuitive, accompanied her telepathically when the crisis came, and Mom was being transported by ambulance to the hospital. In pain and realizing life had little more to offer her except more pain, she told Kenna, "No wonder people die, to get some rest." And 1 hour later, poof, she was gone. Passport expired.